Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing on this manic Monday?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. YouTubers, hi. Nikias, whole lot of movement. Folks got to spend some money. It's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Jam-packed episode today. There are so many moves, so many storylines that we have to talk about, apparently. Going to start on the W side. We had some movement there as well, but we'll start with the pure fun stuff. WNBA All-Star Reserves were announced on Saturday, and that was, I think, three guards or three backcourt players, five frontcourt players, and four wild cards. Brief aside, I wish, like, when they release the results that we know who the wild cards were versus the regular selections, just for my sake. I just want to know how the coaches thought about that. But anyway, we got those results. And normally when we have all-star conversations with the starters, reserves, whatever, it's like, hey, Steve, what did you think of the results? Any quibbles, anything like that? And then I bounce off of what you say and we go. I don't know if we have to do that here because you went 12 for 12 on the reserve selections. So hat tip to you, props to you. You and the W coaches were aligned. The selections were in the backcourt: Kelsey Plum of the Las Vegas Aces, Kelsey Mitchell of the Indiana Fever, Alicia Gray of the Atlanta Dream, Kalia Copper of the Chicago Sky. We've got more to talk about on the Sky front. Sabrina Ionescu and Courtney Vandersloot of the New York Liberty. In the front court, Alyssa Thomas of the Connecticut Sun, duh, MVP candidate. Nafisa Collier of the Minnesota Lynx, Elena Deladon of the Washington Mystics, Ezzie McVigor of the Seattle Storm, having a really fun season, Dawana Bonner of the Connecticut Sun, and Cheyenne Parker of the Atlanta Dream. Unless you have more to say aside from I told you some, you bum, did you have any further comments on the reserve selections?
Nope. Just want to tell all the folks, go wherever podcasts are available, go listen to the last episode of the Dunker Spot, and you can hear my brilliance.
There you go. I had 10 of the 12 instead of Kalia Copper and Sabrina Ionescu. I had Jordan Canada of the Los Angeles Sparks. And I believe I had Natasha Howard of the Dallas Wings. Those were my two differences. But Kalia Copper and Sabrina Ionescu both on my like short list. So like no real qualms there. Congrats. Congratulations to everyone. Also, just roaming Twitter, like shout out to a friend of the program, Taka, who did this and then that inspired me to do so. Like watching the social media post of like Cheyenne Parker and Kelsey Mitchell, like revealing when they find out when they were, you know, named to the All-Star team, first time selections for them. The joy in those videos, it made me smile. Understandable if you were not able to see those posts on Twitter, considering the state of the app right now. That's another rant for another day. But if you were able to see it, and if you are able to look at that now, I would encourage it. It's nice seeing those happy moments. Also on the W front, and speaking of the Chicago Sky, new head coach, new general manager, because James Wade, it was announced on Saturday that he was stepping down from both posts to take an assistant coaching job with the Toronto Raptors. I didn't see this one coming. I especially didn't see it coming before the All-Star break and not even halfway through the W season. The timing is what immediately caught me off guard with this one. And then once you also factor in what the offseason was for the Chicago Sky, in which no Allie Quigley, no Courtney Vandersloot, no Candace Parker, the prioritization rules mostly ruled Emma Mieseman out. You make the trade for Marina Mabry and give up virtually all of your draft equity over the next three seasons, which I didn't like at the time. And we talked about that on the podcast immediately after that happened. I went back through those details today just to brush up on the deal itself because I've been harping on the first round pick. They traded their 23 first or 24 first. And it swapped rights with the Dallas Wings on the 25 first. I just completely forgot the depths in which they gave up draft equity in this one. The 24 second round pick is gone. The 25 second round pick is gone. The 24 third round pick is gone. They have three picks over the next three seasons. And they only really, quote unquote, own one of those. And that was that's the Phoenix 24 second that they got in this deal. It just factors into like a really weird feeling about the timing of this move. Can't regret someone for taking a job that they want. But to have that offseason and then leverage that much and then not even make it through the first season of what that is, and then heading into this offseason, Kalia Copper, who hit us with hard feelings, what are feelings, when asked about it, she's an unrestricted free agent. Courtney Williams, who had a triple-double over the weekend, having a solid season herself, she's also an unrestricted free agent heading into the offseason. I just wonder what the Chicago Sky are going to look like next year. That's kind of where my brain just started going all over the place with. What were your thoughts when the news came down the pipeline?
I mean, they're going to be a different team. The optics aren't great, but I mean, it's a new year for the league. And everything changed for me once it said, hey, the Raptors asked for permission and the Sky granted it. And I was like, well, there's that. Yeah. So like Sky were a championship contender. They gave it their best shot. That era ended. They tried to not rebuild and go all the way to the bottom because they had Kalia Copper. They're still fighting. Like, the vision is still there, but he won't be a part of it. So I can understand how the optics don't look great.
What do you do?
Like, I mean, I don't know the details. I don't know the position, the opportunity he was given. You never know. But as soon as it was, hey, can we interview him? Sure. Okay.
Map change for you with that. Okay. I got you. Like, I just wonder. I don't know, because I zoom out, and as you said, we don't know all of the details yet on, like, what the job itself is. Like, in the article written by Annie Constable over the weekend, the wording of it was front of the bench. And so I'd imagine it's, like, a higher level, like, assistant within the organization. Like, I have to lean on you on that front as someone that coached in the league. I don't have that experience. So I would assume that means that's a pretty fruitful assistant coaching job. The timing also feels weird because, like, obviously the NBA season isn't here yet. Like, Summer League is starting up this week as we record on a Monday afternoon. Like, the California Classic portion starts literally this afternoon. And so I guess there is the we want you around for Summer League, at least in Vegas, as that starts, I think, Friday. But
on the flip side, there's also the you might want to hurry up and grab this before Summer League. Because there's a whole lot of people at Summer League that would enjoy. Anyways, that's a different story.
I see. Well, that would certainly add. That would certainly add some urgency. I guess I would also say, in like just roaming my timeline and kind of feeling out what the reaction is and stuff, it also, I can understand going back to the optics point, to go from head coach / general manager to assistant coach is, I don't know, like that is a step down in title. And that also sent me to the loop, like, if this was James Wade leaves for San Antonio, where Pop is there, but we don't know how long Pop's going to be there. And, like, you can see a very clear, like, pathway to upward mobility to, oh, James Wade's going to be a head coach now. I think it's, like, the timing still stinks, but at least in my mind, like, okay, I can see where he feels like this is an opportunity he has to grab if his dream is to become head coach in the NBA. And that also leads to a whole nother conversation about how you view each league and stuff. But I can at least get that. For him to take the assistant job with Toronto when they just got a whole new staff in place and just committed to a new coach, that's where I'm like, I understand the link with him and Masai Ujiri. That's also something that Annie Constable wrote about in her article. Now I'll make sure to link that in the description if you want to check that out. But it also just
where I think it gets tough, because we don't know what the chemistry was, what the vibe was. Again, if we're talking Toronto, it's first time as an NBA head coach. So you have an opportunity to get in on the ground floor, as some like to speak and say. Mm-hmm. And now this could be your pathway to X, Y, and Z. I don't necessarily, I look at Becky Hammon doing the reverse as enough of a stamp where I don't even go there. Like, there's just the movement in this business is wild. I mean, we literally saw a Summer League team have a Summer League head coach who said, actually, I'm going to work over here now. And he was no longer the Summer League head coach because he didn't work there anymore. Like, this business does that. Like, Becky Hammon going from the NBA to the W and saying, I'm cool here, did way more for the W than James Wade leaving. Like, I don't view it as James Wade saying, hey, this is only this. I'm going to go do that. I can't speak to his passions. I can't speak to anything he's done. But there's enough people who want to be in the W that the W is elevated. There's enough people who want to coach in the G League. The G League is elevated. And yeah, everyone has goals, but you can tell people have different ultimate goals. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing. Because we've seen coaches go from assistant coach in the NBA to head coach of the G League with the hopes of becoming what?
Assistant in the NBA again.
So it's just, it's that kind of deal, right? I don't necessarily think this was an insult toward the W. It was more just, hey, an opportunity is an opportunity.
I got you.
It's time.
It's, boy, is it time. And speaking of it being time, apparently it is Dame time, likely elsewhere, per Dame requesting a trade over the weekend as the app threw up all over itself. Again, that's neither here nor there. It happened.
Now, you said you weren't going to talk about Damian Lillard until the request was made. The request has been made. What are the Damian Lillard thoughts that you have been suppressing, sir?
Well, I wouldn't even say suppressing. It's just like, we don't have a reason to dig into this because nothing's happening. And now things have happened. And as we've heard different reporting from Sam Amick and Chris Haynes about how the like pre-draft and post-draft meetings have gone and stuff and what led to the Dame request. It's like, okay, he was trying to wait this out. We knew what his ultimate desire was. Like, if Portland can make this work, I really want to make it work here. Portland was not able to make the trades that he felt were appropriate in terms of building a contender. And now we are here with the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets as destinations that Dame reportedly wants to go to, with Miami at the top of the list. A whole lot of other teams have inquired. The Spurs have been linked to him. The Jazz have been linked to him. The Sixers have been linked to him. But we don't know how real that is in light of Tyrese Maxey apparently being untouchable per Brian Windhorst. Clippers have been linked. The Celtics have loosely been linked. The Pelicans and the Timberwolves have also reached out, which the Timberwolves one is, it's funny to me in light of all the money that they've tied up. And then also like the picks that they just gave up to bring in Rudy Gobert. And I don't know if they're going to get those back in order to make a move for it, you know. But it still very much feels like Miami or Brooklyn. And I do wonder, like, that's just an interesting dichotomy for me to follow. Because I think if it's Dame requesting a trade and saying, hey, I want to go to one of these two, ultimately, I'm leaving because I want to win and I want to win right now, then Miami seems to be more equipped to give him that situation, which is why I believe that Miami's reportedly at the top of his list right now. Portland is... And then no reporting here, but like I think Portland would be a lot happier to deal Dame to Brooklyn than Miami in light of all of the pick equity that Brooklyn has compared to what Miami has. And just general, like they have some midterm contracts. They have the big one in Ben Simmons. But like they can make that work and have enough picks to feel okay about it. And so I do wonder like which interest wins out ultimately, if it's going to be Brooklyn, if they want to pursue this. Because, I mean, naturally, they're not going to want to give up Mikal Bridges in the deal. They're not going to want to give up Nick Claxton in the deal. And so building enough of a player base that Portland feels okay with and the picks is going to be interesting. And but if you have to go super pick heavy because you're not giving up those two and you get Dame in the building, how are you building out like the true blue blood contender from there? And like I like some of the offseason moves they've made so far. We'll dig into those. But like that interests me. And then with Miami, I think there is a reason that third teams are being floated around to make this work, because I do not think Portland wants Tyler Hero, who is a good player, but not a blue chip talent. And so I wonder, okay, how do you build a boat there? Who are the teams that would want Tyler Hero? And what can you get there? How many assets can you get for Hero from a third team to make Portland feel better? Like that's going to be fun to track. And then in light of, I think it was a Woj ESPN segment where he was like Joe Cronin's like, nah, we're going to try to do what's best for us. We're not just going to send him to Miami. Y'all give us a good deal. We have a superstar that we are moving. Give us a superstar return and we will talk to you. If that's Miami, cool. If it's not, also cool. I wonder how much of that is real versus we need to build leverage. So if it is going to be Miami, we need everything you got. Figure out something with OKC to change those pick protections. We want Jovic. We want the new rookie. We want all the picks available. We want all the swaps. We want Caleb Martin too. Tyler Hero's going to a third team, but whatever you get from there, we want that too. And just, you know, like, we know we ain't getting Jimmy. We know we ain't getting Bam. Everything else, though, we need that. And so I wonder how much of it is that portion of it. Those are, like, my immediate Dame thoughts.
Well, this has been building for a long time.
Too long.
And we've talked about this, and I always said, too much. This is very much a both sides understand, but only one has spoken to the lawyer. And now we're having a different conversation because everyone's arrived at the same conclusion. And I still think in my gut, the math all changed when Scoot Henderson was a possibility because they had the number three pick and Charlotte was ahead of them. Once it was that, it was like, hey, man, I don't think there's a single magic deal that was going to get Portland where they wanted to go with Dame. I think both sides had to have known that to a degree. And that's why I was like, hey, guys, you trade that pick. Hey, y'all gonna trade that pick? Hey, what free agency? Signing trades? Anything? Anything? Yeah, no, Jeremy Grant, cool, but okay.
We knew that already. What are y'all gonna do exactly? What's happening here?
So they didn't get that amazing offer to move off three. Nothing else popped up. It's time to go. It's very weird for me to think of Damian Lillard not being a Portland Trailblazer. And that might just be me being the kid who grew up in Portland. Every Blazer era has some sort of ending that's just like, bop. Hey, here's some success, but not all that. And also, boom, it's no longer here anymore. So that part is strange. Like, literally breaking the all-time scoring record, and then it's time. That's a wild process for me. As far as if I'm Portland, I mean, the return's going to be interesting. The judgment of the return is probably just going to be like, hey, they lost. But I think there's a different circumstance here, Nekias, because they have Scoot, they have Shaedon Sharpe, they have Anfernee Simons. As far as team about to trade the superstar, they at least have a vision of, hey, we have this.
Yeah.
So what can we get that's either going to help with this or can bring us another piece later down the line? And so I think it's just going to be a different circumstance. Because Portland has that glimpse into the future. With Dame, here's the thing about the Miami part, right? And like we can all talk and say, hey, it's out there. He wants to go to Miami, so other teams will back off, all that good stuff. If I'm another team, I'm going to shoot my shot. But how much am I going to shoot?
Yeah, that's the one.
And how many people are really out there that have that same need for Dame that Miami? Not the desire, not the want, but the need. Like, Miami needs Damian Lillard. It feels that way, at least.
Yeah.
After this run they had. If I'm Brooklyn, you just came off the KD Kyrie Harden train. You got Mikal Bridges. You brought Cam Johnson back. You got draft capital back.
Yeah.
Do you want to go in there? Like, I'm sure he would help you. But how much do you want to pay for it?
Yeah.
If I'm Philadelphia, I like Tyrese Maxey a lot.
Yeah. I'm not giving up Tyrese Maxey for Dame. Dame's better.
Yeah. Like, if I'm the San Antonio Spurs, I mean, that sounds fun, but why? We've been going through it. We just got Wimby, and we still got these picks. I'm cool. But that's the part where I'm like, I don't know where else it makes sense.
Yeah. And I think on that note, Steve, don't mean to cut you off. I hope I
will. You good.
Goodness. On that note, that's where I get intrigued by the portion of like New Orleans reached out. Like, I don't know if they're very much dark horse material, but like, that's where if I bounce off of your point about Portland already having at least a foundation of young pieces, like they want a blue chip player back because they're trading Damian Lillard, but like they don't need a blue chip player because they have Scoot and they have Shaedon who they're very high on. And Anthony Simons is already really good and young and on a good contract. So, like, they want to add more to that. They don't necessarily need to find the foundational piece yet. At least we don't think so, because I think Scoot's going to be insane. But if you look at who those three guys are, Anthony Simons is a guard, Scoot's a guard, Shaedon Sharpe is a wing. that's where if I'm New Orleans and I'm checking in, I was like, hey, there were the wrongs about 3-4 Zion. If I'm Portland and I hear that you're interested, they get me on the phone. I'd be like, okay, so what exactly is up with Zion? Because he'll at least give you like the front court piece to complete the core. If that makes sense. Now, obviously, like there's health stuff and everything else that you want to consider if you're going to make that kind of investment. But like something like that is what makes New Orleans interesting to me. Because like they have the front court, like blue chip prospect that they can offer. As opposed to if it's Brooklyn, they have Clax. But again, like you're making the trade so you can have Dame, McHale, and Clax. If you're moving Clax in that, it's not like they can't find another center, but you're not finding another Clax that easily. So that kind of defeats the purpose. But like he would also classify as like that front court piece to solidify things, especially in light of what Portland has at center right now. So like that gets interesting for me.
I have a secondary part.
Okay.
How much of this comes down to, hey, which one of y'all wants to take Yusuf Nurkic?
I think that's a pretty decent portion of it. Because like if you're Portland, like obviously you want a young blue chipper. You want picks. Like in an ideal world, you want the blue chipper picks and you want to be able to clear some cap at the same time. Like I don't think they're going to be able to do all three, especially if Dame is saying, I want to go to these two teams. And with that messaging being strong enough, other teams that make an offer more like, well, we don't have, to your point, one, we don't have to do this. Like it'd just be great to have him because he's great. But two, if we don't have to have him and he also don't really want to be here like that, like he has more years on the contract. So it's different than like a Kawhi situation. But it's still, why are we mortgaging a bunch for 32, 33-year-old guard that we would love to have, but we don't need him if he also doesn't want to be here?
I think that's the part. Different. That's the part right there. Especially in this era, with this CBA, like, do you really want to give up a bunch for a guy who may not actually want to be there?
With the we going over the second name for this?
The last 3 months, you know what I mean? But again, Damian Lillard is a one-of-one type talent. So I would not be surprised like that the list is growing because, hey, why not?
Yeah.
If they're open for business, let's try. Let's shoot our shot because Damian Lillard is a game changer. I just don't know how much people are going to be willing to spend on that.
Yeah. And like even
like, I want to go to this concert. I don't want to do the pre-sale, man.
Why am I doing? Why am I on a wait list? Like, if my friend here has a VIP pass, why am I entering the wait list to maybe end up a row behind him? Like, why am I doing it? And like, that's what makes Utah kind of odd for me because they have a bunch of pick capital. They have Laurie. I feel like they've nailed their draft and stuff. But it's just like, okay, why are we leveraging that for Dame? Like, I don't think we're ready to contend for a title yet. Like, I don't know. Like, that's just what Portland wants in this return versus what Dame wants, and then how teams react to those two things and how that affects packages and thus impacts where Dame goes. That's just going to be an interesting thing to follow. It's just wild that we're actually here. And to one of your earlier points, this just stinks for Portland fans in general. This really stinks for Portland fans. Like, writing wall, etc. But, like, this is one of, if not the greatest, Blazer of all time. Coming off of his best offensive season ever. And now you're resetting to a degree. That stinks. And it's fair to acknowledge that stinks. Which makes it even more important, I think, for Portland to nail this to the degree that they can. And so we'll see what that's going to look like.
Why you do that to me, dog?
What you mean?
Why did you just do that to me?
What? You say that it stinks?
Yes, because you know where I'm from. You just triggered an emotion within me.
It stinks. I feel for you. What do you mean?
Clyde Drexler was traded for Otis Thorpe.
Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis?
If y'all want to talk about the worst returns in history, I was 7.
Did Otis have a left?
All right. All right, next free agent. What we got next? Salute to Dame, salute to the Blazers. I can't believe you just did that to me. That's unbelievable.
We love Otis, have a left.
See, this is why You know what? I had a whole vulnerability piece. I'm going to go. We'll do it. We'll save it for next pod. What's next?
I ruined it. My apologies. I thought that was low hanging fruit. My bad. Let's talk about free agency, though, because Buddy was a lot of players signed and a lot of money was spent. And we had some trades that some have been finalized and others have been finalized. We're trying to get details in. Very confusing. Shout out SpotRack, the transaction flyer. That's dope. I get all the dollar figures and all that good stuff. Shout out Keith Smith. We here. What were you about to say?
I was going to ask a question real quick before you let us right into it. How much did you enjoy the realization of these teams have to spend this money?
Yeah, like the 74 rules are different this year. Like, oh, no, we got to spend.
Like, you have to spend it by the start. Like, no, there's no waiting. Like,
yeah.
Let's get to it. Like, that's part of what was funny. And then roster construction feels so interesting because mm-hmm. you have the balance of these moves we're going to talk about, but you also have the balance of these teams saying, A, we got to spend money. B, losing an asset for nothing right now is painful.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel that by one of those teams that we're going to talk about on this list. And so just that balancing act was fun. But let's get into it, guys.
All right, let's get into it indeed. We will start similar to like our regular season format, teams that impress, teams that make us think, whatever. We'll start with the teams that impressed. We have to start with the Phoenix Suns. We got to start with the Phoenix Suns, man. Brought back Josh Okogie. Brought back Damian Lee. That's dope. Eric Gordon is finally there. 2-year deal. Kata Bates' job is there. I love the signing. Very versatile defender. We'll see how real the shot is, but he's going to be fun, I believe. Drew Eubanks is in. Utah Watanabe is in. Your guy, Chimezie Metu, is in. If you got to go minimum shopping, it's hard to do much better than that if you're Phoenix to surround your big three plus DeAndre Ayton with. I think they did one heck of a job. I think this unlocked, especially with EG Utah, KBD, I think it unlocks a level of lineup versatility that they looked at that second round series against Denver like, okay, we got to get to some different stuff. We got to, one, be able to space and fill the corners. Like, KBD can knock down corner shots. We know Utah definitely can. Now, in a playoff setting, like, I would still imagine, like, teams are, okay, we have to help off someone so they'll get that coverage, but it won't be to the degree of, like, oh, that's Josh Okogie in the corner. We don't have to care. It's more, okay, we have to live with this. And that's a subtle but very important difference to what Phoenix is trying to build. So I just love those moves. Like, losing Jock Landale kind of stinks, but getting Drew Eubanks in there, I think, is fun. But what's up?
I'm going to revisit your Drew Eubanks takes from last season, but it's fine.
but no, like, I think they did a really good job of filling out the depth piece. And I think they can do a lot of different things with their lineups. Money well spent. They feel like the early winners of free agency to me.
I'm with you. The big one for me is Eric Gordon. And I'm glad you hit on it. And I think that's where him being a part of it is where my mindset changed on the Suns offseason. Not that these weren't quality additions, and we'll get to it here in a second, but having Eric Gordon, like, if the answer to who is your fifth ends up being Eric Gordon, that's pretty tough. And, like, we saw what he did as a Clipper, 42% from three when he played for the Clippers last year. He could score. He could space. You can use him in movement. The defense, I understand people are going to point to that. They're going to talk about that. But for me, I would embrace that lineup. I don't think there's an easy button for the Phoenix Suns to tap to magically be great on that end of the floor. I think having that as your final lineup is good. But also having the Okogies and the KBDs of the world to potentially, okay, we really need defense.
Yeah.
We need some help. We need some size. We need some length. But Gordon changes it for me. I just think you can put so much pressure on defenses with that unit. The staggering is going to be even tougher. Like, there's just a bunch of optionality that you talked about. One thing that was interesting to me with the minimums, 2-year deals.
Mm-hmm.
Showing an attempt to build something. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, yeah, like, we know you, like, this is what we have, but we want you to actually be a part of it. Not just this year, but, you know, if it works out, you can stick with us. I really like the folks they signed. You know, shout out to the Metaverse. My question, actually, before I get to that, like, the reason why I like those guys it feels like every one of them understands the assignment. They understand their role. They know what they're in there to provide. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help you play winning basketball, especially with the high level talent you have. The tricky part for me, and it's always this when it comes to hitting the margins, all these guys have to elevate their game. So they got to go from 6th, 7th, 8th, or 11th, 10th, 9th man up to 6th, 7th, 8th man. Mm-hmm. And they have to hit and nail their pressure points. Like Kata Bates Diop, I think he works perfect for Phoenix. What if the shot's not there?
Yeah, it becomes very, it's different. It's very different.
I like Drew Eubanks. I like Metu. I think they can contribute. What if their defense cannot hold up? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. If Yuta and Damian Lee are only hitting so many shots, or defenses are, hey, that's fine. We'll leave that skip open. What's it mean? Like, that's mm-hmm. the tricky part with me. But I like, as far as an attempt, after acquiring this core, I really like what Phoenix has done.
Yeah, like they, I mean, they tied the hand behind their back in terms of flexibility with the Beal trade. But to use your other hand to get this group is good work. And I think they should be applied for that. Obviously, championships aren't won on paper, all of those caveats, etc. But this felt like really good work for the Phoenix Suns. What were your Drew Eubank thoughts for me? What happened before we moved to another team?
Do you like his defense?
Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
They can ask him to do different things. Okay. It's fine. He's not a stopper. Phoenix fans should not be coming in thinking he is going to solve your defense if Ayton ain't doing it. But, like, you can ask him to drop. You can ask him to get to the level. But he's not going to anchor for you. So go ahead and temper your expectations if that's what you feel like you're going to what you're gonna get.
There it is. That's what I was waiting for. If there's nothing else, Nekias Duncan is going to be consistent. Salute to that.
I'm just saying, I like it. Also, they are signing for the minimum for a reason. So, like, you know, there's obviously the ring-chasing element. But also, like, hey, we can get an MLE from a really good team. There's a reason they're in this group, but good work from Phoenix. While we're in the Pacific Division, take a short flight to LA for the Los Angeles Lakers. Brought back Austin Reeves, which, one, good work to bring back Austin Reeves. Two, I'm kind of surprised, especially in light of, I think, the timeline of restricted free agency deals changed, where it's like 24 hours now. I'm surprised nobody threw big money at Austin Reeves to make the Lakers think about it. I figured one of the cap space teams would try.
I do wonder how much they just didn't want to tie up their cap space with someone they couldn't get, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Because the Lakers did kind of push out, like, nah, we'll match up to 100 mil. And so if you believe that, because also we didn't see an offer sheet for Cam Johnson either. And we even saw the trade with Detroit where they take on Joe Harris. Like, Detroit was a team that was mentioned heading into the offseason. Like, yeah, we'll throw money at Cam. We need some three-point shooting. And boy, does Detroit need shooting. The fact that they made that trade should have been a signal. Okay, maybe restricted free agency ain't going to be as popping as it could be with some of those top guys. But yeah, brought back Austin Reeves. So the fact that it's not 4-100, it's like 4-56 and the trade kicker. But, you know, if it's 4-56, I really like that deal for what Austin Reeves can do. You bring back D'Lo on a short-term deal. Fine. Rui getting 3-for-51. Is a little steep for me.
Really?
It is, because I like what he brings and I love the playoff run that he had. What's in the back of my head, what's in the craw, is like he hasn't had the high volume shooting season yet. And it was like, man, Washington, holy crap, he knocked down a whole bunch of threes, but it was on low volume. Then it was back to man, and then he knocked down a whole bunch of shots in LA, but like it wasn't on high volume. I'm just like, if he settles in as a 34% three-point shooter, he really has to continue improving defensively. And he really has to put just generally more pressure in the paint. I won't even say the rim, just more paint pressure in general for Rui to really make that deal pop. But if he does, that's a really good contract. It's just one of those, like we talked about a little bit during the Bleacher Report stream where I was telling you beforehand, I was like, ooh, I kind of want to move Rui down a slot as I thought through it a little bit more. That's why. It's like, if the jumper reverts back, and it's like, the size and athleticism is important. So he's still going to be fine, but it's not going to be home run, if that makes sense.
You know, I hear you, but I think, A, it points to the perception part of this business where Rui Hachimura has that run with that team who has that success, and he knocks down shots at the right moment.
Playing with that guy.
Yeah, so I promise you, again, folks, if any players out there that you're listening, your team success really helps you. Just keep that in the back of your mind. So I think that's, I mean, it's, there becomes a cost of doing business element to this, where if you are 6'7 to 6'8 and have shown an ability to make shots and defend multiple positions, there's a good chance there is $16 to $18 million a year waiting for you.
That's true.
Hey, or 14 to 18 if you want to count Herb Jones, Doug McDermott. What do you make, 13-7? It's the cost of being a somewhat reliable small forward, you know?
Yeah. I got you. So that's just something I'm keeping an eye on. But, like, overall, still really good work for the Lakers to do that. And even with D'Lo, very up-and-down tenure with the Lakers after an up-and-down tenure with Minnesota and up and whatever. But, like, short-term, two-year deal, like, you keep the salary spot. So if you do walk into a deal, if he plays well, then you just love that contract. And if he plays okay, that is a very movable mid-size salary if you want to do something mid-season again. But, like, I think that's good work for the Lakers, and I think that's fine for D'Lo. So good work. On the actual market, getting Taurean Prince 1 year, 4.5, that is wild to me. That's good. That's really good work. For the Los Angeles Lakers. And this is after, I'm trying to remember the exact terminology on the option, but like it was $7 million, I think, that Minnesota turned down to put him in free agency to begin with. So I saw that and I was like, that's interesting for Minnesota. I wonder if they're working out something else to bring him back. And so for it to be the basically 1 year, okay, I'm taking this, but I'm getting back on the market next year deal with the Lakers, that's good. That's nice for Taurean. And obviously at that price point, that's really good for the Lakers. Gabe Vincent, I like the signing.
Oh.
I like it. I saw your thoughts on the timelines. Like, huh, I want to talk to Steve about this. Because we seem to be on different sides of the Gabe Vincent signing. But I do like it. We'll table that one for like 45 seconds. Jackson Hayes, I like the flyer. I like just with the Lakers playing a lot faster last year than they did the year before. Getting another athletic dude who will run the floor hard, be a true rim threat, true aerial threat at that matter. Some of the flash that he showed in New Orleans says, okay, we're spacing him. We don't believe in the jumper, but this dude will chew up space as a cutter and can also dribble it two times and make a pass. Like, that's some interesting stuff to build off of. And if you're playing with this Lakers group, that feels like a flyer that can really hit. Cam Reddish is finally a Laker. And
Cam Reddish is finally... Are you ready? Are you ready for Cam Reddish to score 14 points in 8 minutes? Are you ready for the praise and tweets, man, and problems that Cam Reddish is about to be?
I'm not particularly ready for it. And I say that, like, I am, but I'm not. I'm not ready for all of what's going to come with that. But, like, I'm ready for him to do it consistently. Because I always go back to the really early portion of the Atlanta year, or, like, the second half of the early portion of the Atlanta year, where he was hitting threes. He was beating tilted defenses, and he was defending his tail off. And I'm just like, okay, this is why he wants more playing time. I mean, duh, young players want playing time. But, like, this is why he could warrant playing time with genuine investment in him. But, man, like, he wasn't able to put it together in New York. I take a lot, maybe 3% of that is his fault. Because it didn't make sense for the Knicks to trade him without having a clear pathway for him to get playing time. And that ended up how we thought it was going to end up. But, like, it just hasn't been consistent for Cam. He has not been able to string together 15, 20 games of solid play on both ends of the floor. It's one end or the other. And it makes sense that the Lakers, in light of, like, the Malik Monk thing, and you can go back to other flyers that they've taken on the young, fun wings, I understand why they want him. And Cam has wanted L.A. for a while, based on the reporting and stuff you've seen out there. I do wonder if the Lakers end up with just more wings that they like. Like Austin Reeves is just going to, you can pencil him in for 30, 32 minutes. And if you're looking at like the 1 through 3 positions, and depending on if Anthony Davis is starting at the 4 to 5 next year, it could get tight for Cam Reddish in terms of playing time. And one thing that has been proven so far is that if you are only giving Cam Reddish a bite-sized role, it's not going to be consistent production for him. He needs the runway. If he gets the runway, will not surprise me at all if he puts together a solid two-way season for this team, because the talent is there. I do worry about some of like the decision-making with the ball. He can't get a little bit lost off of it. He's ridiculous on ball when he's locked in. But like I worry about like those kind of elements, field-based elements. But I wouldn't be surprised if it hits. I just don't know if it will.
Question for you.
Okay.
Do you think this is the Lakers potentially trying to go smaller or have more options if they do need to go small?
To go smaller?
To allow Vanderbilt to maybe be a four or those kind of Rui to be a four. Do you think that might be the move there? Or
I can see it, which would then open up some minutes at the two or the three for Cam if they're trying to trend that way. So if that's the full-blown game plan, then I get it. I would then just say, okay, the Lakers probably need to add another big for like depth and insurance and stuff beyond Jackson. Probably someone older, to be frank. If Jack's going to be your young flyer, you just need a vet in case if Anthony Davis gets banged up playing the five again for a full season. You just want to have that. But also, we are like 2.5-3 days in free agency. So the Lakers definitely have time to do that. But yeah, that would make sense, and that would open up more of a pathway, and that would increase the odds that Cam Reddish hits for him. So I can definitely see that.
Well, the thing with Cam Reddish is he's, you know, I always talk about how much fit and opportunity contributes to a player's success. And my mind with Cam Reddish goes back to the defense he showed against Chris Middleton in the playoffs, and we just haven't seen that since. And he's not been able to carve out a role since. Every place he's gone, it's like, hey, maybe this is the place, and it hasn't been it. This is a really fun, like, prove it, bet on yourself type deal.
Yeah.
The question is he going to be ready to contribute? I mean, because we saw what Rui did when he got the opportunity. He made the most of it. Is he going to be able to produce in potentially limited time spans? Yeah. I think that's always been part of the issue for Cam Reddish. It's not that he can't play the game of basketball. It's different when, hey, you're coming in, you might get two stints, you might get 18 minutes, you might get 22 minutes. What are you going to do with those?
Might get 12.
You might play off ball the whole time. So, I mean, you got to find pockets to contribute and be aggressive and also show defense. So that part's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun that the Lakers have a little bit of continuity and they've done some work to try and, you know, keep those lineups as versatile as possible. It's not necessarily the championship formula, but hey, we found something that works for this unit. Let's try and build on it. Torian Prince, great value. I think that's really good. It's going to help them come playoff time to, again, have these options lineup-wise to throw out there as opposed to, well, Rui has to be really good.
Yeah.
Or else our small lineups don't work. Jackson Hayes, I really like that signing. I swear I probably have fallen for every Lakers sign a wing who can shoot and defend. And Lakers sign a big who can screen and roll. I fall for it every time. But Jackson Hayes, his upside, that's fun. I'm with you with the Lakers. Why were you mad at me about my Gabe Vincent thoughts?
I'm not mad at you at all. That is terrible framing. How dare you? No. But no, like I found myself enamored with the fit. Like I do think it is contingent on, hey, he's got to prove that he can like shoot. Because we've seen what happens when the shot's going. We've seen what happens when it doesn't. And so throughout his Miami tenure, he hasn't like proven he is a shooter. He is someone that will take and make tough jumpers. He is not scared at all to take important pull-ups. He can run hot. And we saw that in the playoffs this year. But like the shot's going to be very important. But beyond that, like he is going to be pesky at the point of attack. He's sub-elite, so don't. If I can just rant very quickly. Oh, like, boy. The stuff I saw about, like, Kendrick Nunn going to the Lakers and then he's suddenly this really good defender when he just was not. Don't make Gabe Vincent out to be an elite defender since he's actually, like, a good one. Like, let's just not do that. Let's just throw that out there now. Gabe Vincent's a good defender. Please don't put the Laker dust on don't do that.
Laker dust!
Don't do that. Just don't do that. I had to live with Kendrick Nunn stuff. I was like, dog, that man's gonna die on one screen and y'all gonna flip your tune. But anyway... Tough defender at the point of attack, sub elite, but he's good. Feisty with the pull-ups, not scared. I love the usage that LeBron's probably going to get out of him as a screener. I think that's the really big selling point. Because he's not one of he can ghost a screen and knock down shots or then or attack the tilted defense, get a pull-up. He can do that. But like he will screen. He will force switches. And as we talked through some of LeBron's screening partners last year and in the postseason, I think having a consistent dude like, okay, I know I'm getting something out of this and it doesn't have to be Austin Reeves all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, also, if we're talking about like spacing concerns with Gabe Vincent, like, we want Austin Reaves off ball. We know he can shoot. You can now just say, Gabe Vincent, come here, and feel really good about the look you are about to generate. You are about to get LeBron downhill. You are about to get Gabe Vincent a short roll opportunity. You are about to get a switch that's going to force a rotation. You can play out of that. And I think giving the Lakers a level of comfort and consistency in the half court, based on what we saw with the half court offense last year and in the postseason, I think that's a valuable add. So again, contingent on the jumper still, but like, I think they're going to have some really fun uses with Gabe Vincent. I think he slots into what the Lakers slash LeBron wants to do offensively.
I think bringing D'Angelo Russell back made me like the Gabe Vincent fit a little bit more.
Okay.
That sounds wild, but if you are going apples to apples or apples to oranges, Gabe Vincent is much more of a pull-up threat in pick and roll than Dennis Schroeder was.
Yes.
And you're still going to get that activity defensively. If the catch and shoot goes up, this is a no-brainer. But then again, I think it speaks to the optionality that the Lakers have. To where, hey, we can go to Gabe Vincent if D'Angelo Russell's having one of those days. Or, hey, we can go to these wings and let LeBron do the playmaking. With AD at the five, we can go small. We can go two bigs. Like, there's things they can do.
Yeah.
Which is the fun part for me. So that's where I salute the Lakers for finding it as opposed to another offseason of, well,
let's see what happens.
Can we get back to what had happened before?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel you on that. Okay, so those are my primary two. What other teams stood out to you? Who else did you like?
The Cleveland Cavaliers. Give me the offseason from the Cleveland Cavaliers. I like what the Cavs did.
Okay.
Improving themselves, improving their team, taking what they just saw in the playoffs and trying to make up for it. You come off a playoff loss to the Knicks where they said, hey, y'all can have all of these shots. Please take them. And you didn't make them pay, and you go grab shooting with size, and you up your versatility. I think that's a win for Cleveland. George Niang has shot 40% from three the last 5 years. And I understand that some Cavs fans are looking at Max Strus, and I know I did the Spider-Man meme on the Bird app. I got it on the bit with Max Strus and Chetty. Here's the difference, though, right? Reputation shooting is important.
Okay.
35%, he took 7 a game. So if Max Strus is just in that starting lineup, next to those two guards, next to those two bigs, that can really unlock some things in that playbook. You got the rollers, you got shooters who can space, you got players that can play make. That's a positive. And if you liked what you got from Caris LeVert and Isaac Okoro, that's your bench now. So now it's not as heavy of an ask for them. I think George Niang's skill set fits with what they like off the bench. I think he could play with either big, which I think is important. I just think you have more options, but they have more options to throw at the table lineup-wise, more versatility, two bigs, two guards, and the shooter. You can go with the defender in there. Mm-hmm. I just like that part of it. Now, I do have an asterisk.
Okay.
Because it is kind of wild to think that Cleveland's going to need Caris LeVert, Max Strus, and George Niang to all produce in the playoffs for this to work. But in theory, they may only need one if those bigs are better and those guards keep playing well. They only need one to fit. So that'll be fun, though. But that's the part I can't shake. I'm not going to lie to you. As much as I like the idea of it, what are teams going to do defensively? Does it change the pressure points of their two guards or of their two bigs?
Mm-hmm.
Our team still going to dare their bigs to beat them? Like, that's where I'm a little lost. What do you think about Cleveland?
Fair. Like, I like what they've done. I think, one, just shout out to Max Strus for getting that money. I do feel like Strus is kind of like, and I don't mean this as a one-to-one or anything like that, but, like, Strus feels like the good elements of, like, Chetty and, like, Lamar to a degree. Like, he's not as good of a defender as Lamar. He's not the pure shooter that Chetty is. But, like, he can shoot, and teams have to respect that. And he can put the ball on the deck a little bit. And I think that's important. And I think he can hold up defensively in a way that Chetty couldn't. And especially once you factor in, like, what the defensive infrastructure is with those bigs behind him. Like, I think Max is going to be, he's going to be set up to produce in the playoffs. Now, he still has to knock down those shots, because if you saw what happened in the games that he did, for the in the playoffs and the games that he did not. It just got kind of tough. And we really saw that on the extreme levels in the finals. But like, he's sturdy enough. Like, I think he can hold serve. I like the George Niang signing. I do wonder like how much he holds up defensively in the playoffs. And I wonder if like him being, I just want to know what lineups he's going to be in. I think it's the biggest question. Because it felt like he held up a little bit better in last year's playoffs than I anticipated, but like he still wasn't great. And I wonder, like, if you put him in lineups with both of the bigs, if both of the bigs are there, but we'll keep an eye on that. But if you put him in, if he's at the three with those two bigs, the shooting's definitely going to help. Is he going to get his game off in the same way? Because, like, why Philly was taking some of the, like, the give or take there. So, like, all right, we'll play George at the four or maybe the five if our other backup fives aren't working. And we can really maximize what the spacing is. If he's at the three and he's got a smaller dude on him, does he have the same off-ball value? Like, he does, but, like, it's different. And if you were playing him at the four alongside one of those bigs, will he be able to hold up enough? Which big is it going to be, assuming they're both there? If it's Jared Allen, I feel better about the interior. Not as good as the perimeter stuff as Evan Mobley. And that's kind of flipped if Evan Mobley's the five and Niang's at the four. So that's where I'm just like, okay, how is this going to, like, to your point with playoff viability? That's where my mind goes. I still like it overall, but that's what kept it to I like what Cleveland's doing versus Cleveland's one of the teams I want to talk about, if that makes sense. Because I have enough of those questions where, like, I see it, but also.
Okay, well then, should I try again?
No. I like it. If you have another team, yeah, go for it.
Can I interest you in some Indiana Pacers, Nekias?
Bruce Brown got the bag. How about it?
The reason I brought them up is, hey, they fixed their forward room, in theory. You got Bruce Brown. You added Obi Toppin. Obviously, we know what they did in the draft. I just like the options Indiana has. And this is kind of the little subsection of teams that are like, hey, we have found something. Mm-hmm. Let's build around that and try and enhance that and move forward that way. So I'm interested to see. Like, I just want to see Bruce Brown play next to Miles Turner. Like, I feel like that's going to be fun. And they have so many fun lineups they can throw out there with their scoring wings, with their guards, and now being able to play Bruce Brown as a guard, as a big, as a wing. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
I like it.
What say you?
I like it. I like it. I like just if we could do like a little bit of contract talk. Like, I like this for both sides. Where Andy's like, okay, we got a bunch of cap space. We're going to have to pry this dude from a title winning situation or for other like contenders that have the MLE. We got to spend. But also, we're not about to give Bruce Brown 4 for 90. Because the fit is a good one. I love the fit. But like, also, I want to lock into that as we're trying to build this thing out because we're not ready to compete yet or we're not ready to contend yet. So I like that it's enough money to get Bruce Brown out of there and to get him in the building. And Bruce earned himself a raise, but also short enough to where, okay, Bruce can hit the market again if he wants. If we want to commit to Bruce longer term because it's looking better than expected, then dope. We leave that flexibility to do something else in free agency if we're ready to make that next step. I like that for both sides.
How have you felt about the shorter term, higher money type deals? To where these teams are, hey, we need to get better. Mm-hmm. We have the opportunity to get better. We don't want to tie up all of our flexibility in this. Because for me with Indiana, I look at this type of move and it's like, okay, they aren't necessarily in the we have to make a move to improve our team zone. Mm-hmm. But having a Bruce Brown gets your team better. Your team gets better. It may open the door up for the next person you can get. Mm-hmm. How do you value that?
I feel like one, just teams learned from 2016, and we can leave that there. But teams learned from 2016. And I think in light of what this CBA is and what we're all learning that it is, getting any sort of flexibility, I think is going to be important, especially for like the teams in the mid tier and at the bottom, as stars are getting locked up. Like, you're just not hitting, you're not having a 2010 free agency where like four superstar level talents are hitting the market. Like, those dudes are getting super maxes and you got to trade for them if necessary. And so being able to get shorter term, high dollar amounts puts you in the room to where you can convince a team, okay, if this dude got 3 years left on this deal, here's this 1+1 that we can swap in and that helps us match in trades, but also you ain't got a super commitment, so you can keep your books clear, et cetera, et cetera. So that works. And then again, for younger teams like Houston, I know we're going to talk about them, but okay, we can get a vet in the building without tying up our books for 3-4 years. And if it doesn't hit, oh no, we can't even make the contender trades for strong vet that we don't need, because that strong vet is making $19 million a year. For three. So it just makes, it, I see the logic behind it.
No, it makes roster construction fun. Mm-hmm. So I figured I'd get your opinion on it. The great Nekias Duncan, who's always delivering the goods. But yeah, it's the only teams I have.
Okay. Doing my best. Let's get into the teams that made you think. Who had your brow raising?
I'm going to go number one, Denver.
Okay.
This is not an insult to Denver. It's just an interesting time for Denver. And just think about, we're what? Just a few weeks removed away from repeat season, dynasty talk. Is Bruce Brown going anywhere?
Coach Michael Malone said. A resounding no. We'll put it like that. You can find a clip on your own time.
It's just interesting because they found the championship formula, and you win the championship and you're going to lose pieces because you win the championship. We see it every year. Mm-hmm. Well done. Let me get that. let me get a piece of what you built. So you're still trying to stick with the championship formula while also having to get different pieces on the fly. So like, I like Justin Holiday. I think in theory he provides size and shooting, and the Denver context should help him.
But also,
you'll always love it until you need it sometimes. And that Dallas run, Atlanta run, he gave the Kings an idea. Mm-hmm. So I'm just a little concerned. You lose Bruce Brown and Jeff Green, who again were key parts of that bench playoff run, that rotation, your versatility. It's just not going to be so easy to replace them. I know they got young guys, but that's going to be a unique challenge I'm keeping an eye on for with Denver. Did you mm-hmm. have any Denver thoughts?
It just feels like a bet on the young wings / boards that they have in the building. And then those guys got to step, going to have to step up. We're going to see more Christian Brown. We're going to see Peyton Watson. So that should be fun. And I think in an ideal situation, you just want Justin to help those guys out around the locker room, in practice facility, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you want Justin on the random Tuesday. One of those guys doesn't have it, and he can give you the 8 points in 3 minutes and finish the game with 12 points in like 17, and cool. If it gets to the point where Justin Holiday, you are our eighth man, that's where I get concerned, because that says something about the younger guys not being ready. And if you need Justin, then that becomes a little problematic, because like, there has been some slippage defensively over the last couple of years. Like, the movement stuff is still important, but he has to knock down those shots. So just keeping an eye on it. And you know, again, it's just opening weekend, so we'll see what else Denver pulls out the hat, but definitely fair. What else you got?
The Detroit Pistons. I'm just trying to figure it out. Not mad, not upset. I actually have liked a lot of the moves they've made during this Troy Weaver era. I feel like I've been on like the wrong side of it every single time. But I'm like, nah, man, I get it. I totally understand. I like the personnel that they've added, that they keep bringing. It's good stuff. My problem is I look back at the total team, and I do like the dog head tilt. Like, Nekias, you ever made meatloaf?
Go ahead. This should be good.
Well, no. The first time I ever made meatloaf, it did not go well. And I'll just fast forward to the end where I open the oven and it's just a pool.
Well, one, we have our podcast title for the audio version. Have you ever had meatloaf? Okay. Go ahead.
But that's where I'm looking at Detroit and I'm like, okay, I like a lot of these ingredients. Something has gone wrong. I need to see where the next part is. That's a lot of guards. That's a lot of bigs. Do you need to have both Joe Harris and Bojan Bogdanović while also addressing your shooting problem with those two? You see what I mean there? Do you see what I'm hinting at?
Yes. Oh, God. That's so good. That's so good. Have you ever had meatloaf? That's... Wow. I cannot wait for it. I need the last quote tweet immediately when he hears this. That's gonna be, oh man. All that's right. Good. Anyways. Okay, well, who else did you have?
The big one for me was Houston. They had all the space in the world, Nekias. Mm-hmm. The targeted names ended up being the targeted names. Fred VanVleet, folks, is very, very good at basketball. And we saw a reminder of what he can do in pick and roll with Jakob Poeltl, the scoring, the playmaking. You can trust him with the ball in his hands. He can play off ball. He can set things up. He's going to help that team without disrupting their growth. We're going to get rid of some of those, hey, what do you do in possessions? Those, can we do the Houston Rockets pass counter possessions? That's valuable. That's important. Dylan Brooks. I understand how 80% of y'all feel about Dylan Brooks. It's going in 1 year. It's going out the other. I understand. But I'm curious to see what version we see from him with this context in Houston. His defense is going to help that team. I don't think anyone can argue that. You can be mad at the choreography, the antics. I think he's going to help this team. And there's not a lot of other people in that locker room who can defend at that level, which I think is going to help him carry a little bit more weight than people understand. Mm-hmm. So does that help elevate him? Does that help his value, his leadership? Mm-hmm. Couldn't you see Ime Udoka playing him 38 minutes a night?
Oh, boy.
Like Josh Hart was built for Tibbs. You never know how this works.
Yeah, good.
Jock Landale, I get it.
Wow.
My only issue with the Jock Landale thing is, did you change anything defensively? He's good at basketball. He knows his role. Do you not have the same defensive issues with your bigs?
Yeah, I mean, I trust him in drop more than Şengün, but like also, I trust a lot of bigs more than Şengün in drop. So
I feel that's what I'm saying.
Hey, Jeff Green in the building. You know, put him at four. More growth from Jabari. More Tari at the four, maybe.
No, shout out to Jeff Green. He gets a ring. He gets to add another team to his collection.
Going back.
Gets a bag. No, I'm kidding. gets a bag. Oh, yeah, I forgot. He already was a Rocket, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's back.
I can't even keep track of Jeff Green. I'm trash. Boo me in the comments. It's fine. The flip side is, like, they cleared the logjam they created by just giving talented young players away, a la Oprah and Cars. How do you think Memphis felt just waking up and be like, oh, we got Josh Christopher, huh? That's neat.
Yeah, that's the part that I was going to hit on with Houston. And luckily, this will be the last time that I have to bring this back up, because I've been talking about this for like a season and a half on the pod. This was all part of the issue that I had with Houston's draft a year and a half ago, where I was like, hey, I like Jalen. I like all of these dudes individually. This is a whole lot on the roster, though. How are you growing all these dudes? How are all these dudes going to develop? What's happening? And then last year, how many games did Josh Christopher play last year? Show some really fun stuff on both ends at the end of his rookie year. How many games did he play last year?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. How many games you think? How many games did he play?
17.
No, it wasn't that start. He played 64. How many minutes did you think he averaged?
10.
12. And that's my... and there we go. Went from 18 in the rookie year to 12 in the second year. And it's just like, well, how are we building on this? And so now you have another draft, and now you're trying to add vets because you want to take another step, which, understandable, because you like what you have in Jalen. You like what you saw the second half for Şengün. I think you just like Şengün, period, but you really like the second half where you use them more, et cetera. You get our man in the building. Like, they get Cam Whitmore. They love that. It's like, okay, cool, more young talent. Wait, what are we going to do with this other young talent, though? How are we building the room? Now, I do wonder how much bail we give Houston for this, where, like, just reading around, like, they were making moves in anticipation of Brooke Lopez actually coming, and then he just did not, which would just be unfortunate if that's how it went down. But, like, this possibility still existed, even if it wasn't for that particular reason. Mm-hmm. It still felt like you want to get to a point where, okay, we just have too many young players, and we can't develop them all at the same time. OKC's reaching the same problem. It's more like Houston, like, derogatory, OKC complimentary, based on the vibes. But, like, in general, they're about to hit the same point. We're like, okay, we like all these young dudes. But, like, at the end of the day, we're giving Shea 36 minutes. We're giving Josh Giddey 34 minutes. We're giving Jalen Williams 34 minutes. Chet coming back. We just got Casey Wallace. That's why I tweeted this morning, like, oh, snap, this is a big summer league for Trey Mann, because they got a whole lot of guards. It's going to be kind of tough. But, yeah, so that's where I'm just like, man, it's wild that they're giving up this kind of talent. But now I'm interested to see how this all comes together, because I do think we could see a plus 8, plus 10 win bump from Houston. That wouldn't throw me off. I'm not ready to. I need the offseason when we do like the season preview pods and stuff. I need time to like simmer on what they really do before I make the Houston can be like the 10th seed or make play in noise argument or not. I want some time. But like, it wouldn't surprise me if they get in that, if they get in that range. Like, Fred is good. Dylan Brooks is a good basketball player. He is an infuriating basketball player. So we have to see like how he's reeled in and all the good stuff. Like, that's an all defense caliber dude that has drained 37% of his catch and shoot threes throughout his career, with a not insignificant amount of total threes taken. So like, he can knock down shots. So yeah, I just want to see how Houston continues to build it out. And I said this on Twitter as well, as I've been doing this free agency thread that has now gone on for like 3.5-4 days at this point. I don't know how I got myself into this, but anyway,
like, hearing thank you for it.
Yeah. But hearing some of the contract details, like, Dylan Brooks apparently has like a descending contract. So it's 480, but like, it's going to be cheaper by the end of year four. And like, Jock Landale got 432, but I think only the first year is fully guaranteed. There's some triggers and stuff move forward. Like, I feel a lot better about those contracts in addition to, okay, this is a veteran that can play basketball and they need those. So I'm on the positive side of what Houston has done, but like, the backside is also worth noticing.
Okay.
Where like, okay, they are having to give up Ty Ty and Uzma Garuba and, you know, Josh Christopher out of there because they just couldn't find a pathway for those guys. So I hope we're not here in 2 years. Or it's like, hey man, we really applied that Cam Whitmore pick. Why are you being traded to Philly? So I don't know. So we'll just keep an eye on that kind of thing. Did you have another team in that regard?
No, I hit on mine. You tell me what you got, Nikias.
Okay, so I'll try to go quick. Atlanta interests me as they've been on the other side of like, hey, Houston, we'll take your talent. They got Uzman, they got Ty Ty from Houston. So like, I like that because I like both of those players individually. Like, I do think Ty can run an offense for you. And Uzman, like, the defense really pops for me whenever he plays. And like, he's had some really fun passing flashes last year as well. How much time is Uzman going to get if they still have Clint and also Onyeka? I don't know, because like, I'm just not playing him at the four. And even if I wanted to play him at the four, they don't have a spacing five to make that work. So I don't know what happens there. I feel better about it if Clint is traded somewhere. But if not, then it's just like, okay, you got young talent, but now you're in a log jam too. I don't know what it does. And then obviously with Ty Ty, like, you can play him at both guard spots, but like, how often are you playing him alongside Trey or DeJounte? And then you also have like AJ. So we'll see. And beyond that, they just have not made a free agent signing yet. So they're literally on my mind because I don't know what's happening yet. Okay. So that's where Atlanta starts with me. Minnesota is interesting to me because like, they added more talent. Like, one, they brought back talent, like Nas back. They re-signed Nas Reed. Anthony Edwards, one of the few players that just got full max, got those announcements coming over the weekend. Shout out him. Shout out Tyrese Halliburton. Shout out LaMelo Ball, et cetera, et cetera. I like Shake Milton. And we have seen when he gets consistent playing time that he can score the basketball. He can drive. He can shoot. Like, defenses aren't like scared of him on the perimeter, but he can knock down shots. And then I look at what Minnesota has from like a spacing standpoint. And like, this got me like yelled at on Twitter a little bit. But like, I look at what Minnesota has from a spacing perspective. It's like, okay, how many of these dudes scare defenses? And as such, what version of Shake Milton are we going to get in Minnesota? What room, like, he's going to have playing time. He's going to have a path to that. But like, in a literal sense, what room is he going to have to like really maximize what he can do with the ball? And like, I have that question. I can be proven wrong. And I'll acknowledge so such. But like, that's where I'm just like, I like Shake. I don't know if I like Shake in Minnesota. Troy Brown Jr. Like, you've been laughing at me about my TBJ takes for like a couple of years now. But like, I like what he can do as a connector. He can knock down shots. Defenses are scared of him. He can defend. Really good gap filler. I like him. Our defense is going to be tilted enough in Minnesota to where he can pop? I don't know. I need to see it. And so like, as I just go down the line with Minnesota, it's like, okay, I like these players individually. Can you build enough of a base? Like, I'm probably a little bit higher on like the potential of Troy there, just because I know Chris Finch wants to get more movement. And we've seen flashes of that when it's really hit. And like, he feels like the kind of wing that can really fit in the system that Chris Finch wants to run. But again, they have to be able to get to that. So again, like, I'll see, but that's where I have question marks with Minnesota. Did you have Minnesota thoughts?
It was more like, I think trying to replicate or replace what they had beforehand.
There we go.
I can speak today. It's fine. On the low. So it'll be interesting to see what if they move the needle. But it just kind of feels like, I mean, last year you had Jalen Noel, Jordan McLaughlin. This year you also have Shake Milton and Troy Brown. Like, I don't know. It's just like, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, so like that's where I'm just kind of iffy. And then the last one that I had was Toronto, where you lose Fred VanVleet. That's a lot of money, so I get it. But you lose Fred VanVleet, you replace him with Dennis Schroeder, which, like, Dennis is not as good as Fred VanVleet, so you hurt there. Like, I do appreciate, as good as Fred is, like, the finishing stuff was just not his portion in Toronto throughout his career. He made improvements, but, like, he's still not a plus finisher by any stretch of the imagination. Like, Dennis Schroeder is a walking paint. He will get to the rim. He can't finish. I think that's going to be helpful. But, like, he's also a much worse shooter than Fred is. So for a team that already had spacing questions, you're now throwing Dennis Schroeder into the mix instead of Fred VanVleet, who was your most important shooter last year. It's like, that can get a little bit iffy. We'll see what that looks like. And then they add Jalen McDaniels, who, in a vacuum, I like. And I feel like I'm just repeating myself from when Philadelphia traded for him. I was like, hey, I like this dude. Rangy defender, he's going to help in transition, will run, he can grab and go himself. Cool. How is he going to be used in Toronto?
In light of all these... As another person who's tall and is a wing?
Yeah, it's just like, this dude can defend. Cool. If Toronto's in transition all the time, like, it can work. If not, I don't like this fit.
Okay.
I would like to see him in a spacier situation.
Okay.
And so that's where I look at Toronto, like, there's... only so much they can do with all the names that went off the board before we got the official Fred decision and stuff. But it's just like for a team that just could not shoot and your two primary signings are Dennis Schroeder and Jalen McDaniels. Like, I don't want to be reductive, but that's where my brow raises. Like, they can help. Again, the rim pressure is going to be important for Dennis. I think the defense overall, and I don't even want to discount the defense from Dennis because he's spicy at the point of attack. He ain't Fred, but he can do that. It's just how are you maximizing these dudes?
Okay.
Well, I just want to see what Toronto does.
I hear you. Well, let's talk about the real main event of today's program.
Okay.
What the folks really came to see, which is Nekias Duncan taking that amazing thread that he provided to the folks on the Bird app and giving us the folks that he loved, the signings that he enjoyed the most. Give us this treat. Because remember, Nekias, you went on the old man of the three and talked about the Charlotte Hornets for 128 seconds. You went on the low post and gave a list of 38 people for most improved. The people need this list. Give them the heat of the under-the-radar signings.
All right. Well, I will do my best. Josh Richardson to Miami, welcome back. Still a very good defender. Not elite, but still a very good defender. Can knock down shots, can knock down mid-range pull-ups. Things going to slot right into Miami. Probably going to be starting, depending on what happens. I mean, I think even regardless of the Damian Lillard trade, I would imagine he probably starts. So we will see what that looks like. Just a fun signing there. Sasha Vezenkov in Sacramento, EuroLeague MVP. That dude can shoot the leather off the ball. And more importantly, and what's more fun for me, that man can really move off the ball. Like, normally you think about this big man can move. It's like this athletic freak that just drops down the floor, can fly, whatever, whatever. Spatial awareness on 100 for Sasha. He's going to be such a hand-in-glove fit in Sacramento. I want to see how much playing time he gets in light of them bringing Trey Lyles back. He's going to play mostly backup five, but he'll play some four as well. Harrison Barnes is going to lock some minutes at the four. So we'll see like how much room he gets. But the shooting's superb. The cutting is really superb. The relocation skills are going to be important. And if that hits, he's going to have a lot of fun playing golf with De'Aaron Fox, playing golf with DeMontis Sabonis if he's in lineups with one or both of those guys. Really enjoy that signing. 3-for-20 is not anything super steep. So that should be fun. Corey Joseph in Golden State. Respectfully, I got tired of watching that man as a Piston. Like, they're very much a youth movement. They just gotta let the young dudes rap, let them rock. He wasn't even bad. It was just like, well, this isn't enjoyable. I came here to see the young development. What is this? Corey Joseph on a veteran squad, that moves the needle for me. Cause that man can still shoot the leather off the ball, can play on or off the ball. It's gonna be a fun fit alongside Steph or Chris Paul, can hold his own defensively. I think that's hand in glove. And also, just someone that just takes care of the ball. Very important for a Warriors team that turned it over a ton last year. And we really saw that in the playoffs. So having a steady hand on a team that actually makes sense for him, I like that. I think we're going to see some positive Corey Joseph minutes in Golden State. I'm going to go to Dallas really quickly. Seth Curry, welcome back. If you are going to be Luka, have the ball, Kyrie, have the ball, we need space, let those dudes rock, you need shooters. And Steph Curry is one of the best shooters in basketball, also adds a movement element that I think they were missing from last year, especially with Tim Hardaway Jr. having a close start to the season that he had, and Reggie Bullock just kind of falling off the face of the earth for a little bit in terms of shooting. So, like, adding Steph into the room, add a dribble handoff element. I think Dallas was, if I can remember off the top of my head, I think they were 22nd in dribble handoff rate last year. I think that goes up with Steph Curry back in the fold. That's a fun signing. Dante Exum, NBA 2K villain, welcome back to the NBA. Jumper apparently is better now, in addition to him being able to defend his tail off across multiple perimeter positions. I kind of like it, man. I kind of like it. Some guard depth, some guard insurance if one of the high money guys are either moved or they don't have it early in the year. Like, I had some athleticism for a Dallas team that just does not run very often. I want to see him in some second units highlighted by Kyrie. That's going to be cool. Some new moves coming in the pipeline. You like Torrey Craig in Chicago, adding some size. Like Patrick Williams, you don't have to just be the big wing defender. We actually have someone else that could do that. That's neat. Torrey Craig shot well from three last year. We'll see how real that is. It's cool stuff. Some cool stuff.
Let's go. Who's the toughest name to omit off the list, Nikias? Who's the one you want to talk about?
You stole Javon Carter from me. I was like,
okay, sure did, buddy. Fair
enough. Like, all right, fair enough. You got it.
Who else was on there? This is your time to shine.
This is my time. I'm going to let you go. I keep going.
I know. Javon Carter. Honestly, I just like seeing him in this context. We saw Chicago have success with Patrick Beverley and Alex Caruso. Getting Javon Carter is a plus with his shooting ability and his ability to score and his defense. And I like the Bulls strategy of talent or dog in them. That's it.
No talent or dog.
Yeah, do you have talent or you got that dog in you? Which one?
That's that's lovely. Did you
have I have one more for you.
Okay.
I'm going to butcher this name, but it's always better to do it on YouTube than not. Vasilija Micić.
Ah, the Thunder guard.
To the OKC Thunder. Look, and this is doing the podcast with you for entirely too long.
Okay.
I'm not familiar or all the way familiar with this game, but what I've seen, buddy, that passing and pick and roll, you shouldn't have Giddy and him passing the ball like that. And if the shooting can stick like that, you're going to lose your mind at this guy at some point. I can already predict it. 8:40 a.m. Nikias after a bacon, egg, and cheese talking about Vasilija Micić passing. It's going to happen. 8:40 a.m. Book it in October. Take us home, Nikias.
Wow. Well, we will save some of the trade thoughts, I guess, for later. We have run long talking about free agency stuff. We will have, I'm sure, more signings in the pipeline by the time we record later in the week. But thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. We appreciate you. Subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel if you have not already. Also, subscribe to the podcast in audio form if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. I guess Stitcher for right now. We'll see. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already, or if you can, based on what the app is right now. Just need to hit on there. We're having fun discussions in there. Also, link below should be the passageway to our online watch parties. We're going to be watching Summer League Hoops. We're going to continue watching the W, some wrestling, whatever else. Also, we didn't get to talk about wrestling. We'll save it for the next podcast. Buddy, Roman got pinned. Anyway, we have fun. So click the link. It should be hyperlinked. If it is, just enter your information. It is free. No shenanigans. If not, copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Hey, shout out to Wimbledon.